It is Sunday, September 22nd, the first day of fall, the autumnal equinox. The sun being directly above the equator only happens twice a year, giving us equal portions of day and night. What a great day. What a great time to be alive. Here on the Gulf Coast, of course, it feels a lot like late June or early July. Light and variable wind and high temperatures, a lot of perspiration, lots of sweat. But enough about the weather. Look, I hope you're patching yourself up as best you can, putting a good face on a bad situation, maybe a great face on a train wreck waiting to happen. What am I talking about? I don't even know. I sincerely hope that you're feeling happy and free as we turn another chapter of our lives into a new season. So why not right now bring back my younger brother, Travis McArdle, to the show? Been a good little while since I had I talk to him often, but a good long chat with Travis for the podcast. His first appearance being on episode 34 back on April 1st. We get into some Chicago Cubs talk, some fantasy football talk, some Mastodon talk, some music of September 1999 talk 25 years ago, and other important issues of the day. For your listening pleasure, I split the conversation into three parts, what I'm going to call the Travis Trilogy. Now, as far as Dan Time episodes go, these ones are pretty much in tasty little bite-sized pieces, because some of these episodes, as you know, can go on quite a while, and that's great. That's great, but sometimes it's nice to have a little half-hour chunk. Be on the lookout for parts 2 and 3 this week. They're each flavorful in their own little way. Dan Time Pod is how you find Dan Time on your social media platforms. Please also leave a 5-star rating wherever you listen. I really appreciate it. Or a 1-star rating with some colorful commentary. Tell me what you really think. I appreciate you as a listener. Okay, let's jump in. Part 1 of an in-depth 3-part series with my brother. It's Travis time.
Man, we have spanned, and I use a lot of time references based on my son Joe's baseball seasons. We have spanned his spring season through the summer, and then now we're back in fall baseball. So it has been a while.
5 months, however many weeks that is. We tried to line it up a few times, and you know, as with anything, you think it would just be easy to get certain people on the line and to do a call, but it's, you know, life happens.
These kids.
How are you dealing with it, with the ages and the challenges and the attitudes? Is it going smoothly or smoother in 2024 with your trio than it was, say, in 2022?
Yeah. I would say absolutely. Just because, you know, when you have, you know, babies, that's its own challenge, and then toddlers, and then, you know, 3 to 4. It's just a lot of
nonsense.
A lot of fuss. Mm-hmm. But our youngest, Allie, just started kindergarten. So, you know, we have all 3 kids in 3 different schools, which is very nice. And, you know, everybody's just maturing. You know, oldest is Michael. He's 13. So, you know, you got, you know, dealing with teenagers, which is normal. You know, and you got Joe in the middle, who he actually identifies with you. He recognized early on, once we had Allie, that he was the middle kid. And he was able to look at us and say, wait, Daniel's the middle kid. And so he kind of, I think, you know, he identifies with you in being that it's hard being the middle child, and it's going to be hard on him. But he does really good with it.
Well, I definitely feel a special bond with Joe. It's like an unspoken bond. You just know, and you know that you're in that zone, and sometimes you're involved, sometimes you're the last to find out, and sometimes it's just okay. It's okay being the middle child. And now I have one as well. And he brings his own host of, oh gosh, I need to be careful what I say, because I always think that like my children might hear this in 7 years when they're 11. They're like, Dad, that was a really nice thing of for you to say about me being such a difficult little toddler.
Well, it's just stating the facts. And you know, if they grow up one day and they have kids of their own, you know, everybody sees it, and it's not, you know, being mean, it's just being real that kids can be difficult. They pull you in so many different directions. They need a lot, and you have to provide a lot. And, you know, so I guess to your original question, it's definitely gotten easier in the sense that, you know, Michael and Joe can prepare a lot of their snacks and meals. You know, we still obviously cook dinner and breakfast for them on the weekends. But a lot of the stuff they just do on their own. Just to give you an example, last year, you know, I'm sure you help Warren with his schoolwork, and you'll help the others when they get older. Mm. But so Michael last year, I didn't help him with any schoolwork in sixth grade. I monitored obviously his report cards and all that kind of stuff. And he got to the end and he made straight A's, and he never once asked me for help. So that was one thing I just did not have to worry about. And then I focused a lot with Joe on his homework in fourth grade. And he was struggling in certain areas. So it allowed me to free my time at night to really sit down with Joe and not have to necessarily worry about Michael. And then once we realized, oh my gosh, he's made straight A's in sixth grade, you know, we were able to, you know, give him something nice once school got over.
That is really something to be proud of. In sixth grade, it's not an easy grade to come out the gate and make straight A's.
No, and I'm sure you can remember, and I'm sure anybody listening can remember, just the jolt of getting out of fifth grade and then starting sixth grade, that first couple of weeks when you're like, I don't belong here, this is too much.
Yeah.
And I talked to Michael about that last year, and he was like, I really hate it. It's, you know, everyone's so much older, and it's just going so fast. And I talked to some of his friends, too, and they all had the same feelings. And then we had a pool party after sixth grade got out, when school got out. And I asked him and some of his friends, like, hey, how was sixth grade? And they're like, eh, it was fine. You know, you just have to get over that hump. And I think you could look at that at really anything in life. You know, when you're doing something new and it's scary and it's moving too fast for you, if you just slow down and just say, take it day by day, it'll be all right.
That's right. Yeah, I think sixth grade for me, I seem to remember just, it was the first feelings of isolation. There was like a friend group that dispersed for me, like from fourth and fifth grade. It was like, oh, because we're in different classes. And then, so you got to try to catch up with people and try to create a new hang with them. And they're in different places, different activities. And you look around, you're like, oh, I don't really have any new friends. I need to maybe make some. And then, yeah, it was an odd year.
Yeah. I think it's like that for everybody. I remember being at a pep rally the first week, and it's looking at all the, you know, people and the football players, and, you know, you come from elementary school and now you're basically in mini high school. And I remember having this feeling of I've got to go back, knowing full and well you can't go back, but yeah, you just get through it. And then I'm telling you, sixth grade, seventh grade, eighth grade is where a lot of people meet a lot of their lifelong friends. You know, I still have friends today that I talked to that I met in sixth grade. So I just try to tell Michael that.
And, yeah.
And yeah, he's doing good. He's in seventh grade now, and just, you know, I look at him and he's almost as tall as I am, and it's just crazy. And you know, as you know, having kids, as they grow, you're just like, man, you were just a baby, just a little baby, and now here you are.
How about now, as the years go on, you put a lot of stuff in the donation box, you get rid of the clothes. Are there any just stray toys from the toddler era, Michael's toddler years, that are just in a closet or just under a bed, like kind of like the Toy Story movie? Are there any little just scattered or hidden toys that are still with you guys? I know you made a move from the old house, but
yeah, it's funny you say that, and I'm sure you're going to see this with Warren, Wyatt, and Vivian. You'll just see a toy reappear out of nowhere. Just last night, Allie pulled out a Scout, this little green dog.
Oh, yeah.
Plug into your computer and you can program it to say, the kid's name, and you know, my favorite food is bananas or whatever. And she was holding Scout. So,
I remember
but
Michael's scout.
yeah, Michael had one, Joe had one, and then Allie, because she's a girl, she had the Girl Scout, which is Violet.
Yep.
Not sure if Vivian has one of those or not.
No, she has plenty of stuffed animals. She loves her.
But you're not thinking of the Leapfrog Corporation. They need Vivian to have a Violet. What are you doing to to their stock price?
Vivian likes her baby dolls, and she calls them BBs.
BBs,
Instead of
okay.
baby, she just pronounces it BB.
Yeah.
But that's what she really likes is babies. And yeah, it's an interesting mix of interesting cast of characters right now in my house. Was just going back to what we were talking about earlier, middle children, things that any of your children can get into in preschool. And if you don't want to cover this topic, we don't have to. But I'm going through something now with Wyatt. And Wyatt, if this is the year 2032 and you're hearing this, I'm sorry for bringing it to light, but we're having some biting problems at his school right now, and he's on a very thin leash or thin ice. I was reprimanded this morning by the
You
director,
were
and
reprimanded for his biting when he's in their care.
yeah,
Interesting.
you know, and you need to sit down and have a talk with your 3-year-old. By the way, because I got this is hilarious. When he was 18 months old, he was in this kind of go-between daycare until he turned 2. And he got written up for something. It was putting toys down his pants. And the note said, "Please have a talk with Wyatt about this behavior." What kind of
So you're supposed
conversation
to
is
sit
that?
down, you know, you're supposed to sit down and really adjudicate that with a 18 month old.
Listen, son. We need to talk about, hey, listen, I need your full attention here. What
Yeah.
I got to talk to you about something.
Put the
I just,
sippy cup down and come here.
yeah. I mean, there's ways, and now, so he's three and a half-ish, and I do talk to him about the biting and the hitting, which he doesn't do all the time, but it has happened a few times. And so when I drop him off, I don't know if you experience this as well, but you try to give that fresh advice as you're leaving the preschool, like, "Now remember, we don't hit our friends, we don't bite our friends, we don't spank our friends, we don't drag our friends or whatever." I'm trying to,
Yeah.
but did you do, what are your thoughts on all that?
Yeah, no, we actually dealt with the same thing. We had Joe, and I've talked to him about it. He laughs about it to this day, but you know, he's probably around the same age, and we had him at a daycare, and he was doing the same behavior. He was biting. And the director did the same thing. She sat me down and she said, "This is unacceptable. And if he keeps doing it, we're gonna have to remove him." And so, you know, we talked at home, me and Robin, and we decided let's just go ahead and proactively pull him out and put him in somewhere else, because we were also not very happy with that daycare.
Yeah.
And it's really difficult to find new daycares and change, but we were just like, whatever, we'll just change. And so we luckily found a new daycare and went to go talk with the director, and I said, "Hey, go ahead and put in our notice. We're gonna remove Joe." And she looked so shocked. She was like, "What?" And I said, "Well, I mean, honestly, you were threatening to kick him out, and I can't have you kick him out if we don't have something set up to begin with." And she just was taken aback. And then we put him in a new daycare, and we sat down with the new daycare, and we said, "Listen, he has some bonding issues." And they approached it a completely different way, because you know, when you and Natalie are at work, and you know, your child is at daycare, they're under the care of that facility. So whatever happens is really on their watch. Now, I'm not sure if you see this at home, but I never saw Joe bite at home. So it was always when I wasn't around. So how am I going to correct a behavior when I'm not there? And there's the communication issue in the moment. So yeah, and so the new daycare said, "Well, listen, don't worry. We understand that I mean, every daycare deals with this. I mean, there's no rhyme or reason why a 2 or 3 year old, you know, bites a friend." And so they said, "If it happens here, you know, we're going to work on it. And if it happens at home, you work on it, and we're just going to tackle this together." And I was like, "Thank you. This is really all I needed." And like anything, I mean, if I got a call from school that Michael had bit another child, I'd be mortified because he's 13, you know. But they grow out of it. They just do. And you can't look at a kid and say, "Hey, this kid's going to be a biter." There's just no rhyme or reason. It's just the way that certain children react to certain situations.
Yeah, and I want to be careful not to, because some things I say on this show, maybe there's an expectation that there's a lot of sarcasm and I'm just making a joke out of it. It's serious stuff. And if another child is on the receiving end of that, that parent's not very happy. But we had
Oh, to your point, a lot of parents do take it very seriously and they're very upset when their kid gets bit. But as the parent of a former biter, one day he got bit. And I wasn't happy because I don't want to see him get hurt by any stretch of the imagination. But I handled it a lot differently than if Joe hadn't have had that little issue when he was, 3 or 4. So I can definitely understand your point. If you've never dealt with it as a parent, it is like, oh my God, my kid's getting bit by this mean kid over here. But it's just different when you're the parent of that kid biting. I think there's just two ways to look at it.
We haven't seen it at home. There are some other things that, he gets frustrated with Warren and he takes things away from Vivian and does things like that. And there's some hitting that goes on and we correct that, but I don't see biting here.
Yeah.
And had a pretty open discussion with our director today, whom I respect, and hopefully it doesn't happen, but it's kind of frustrating when you have a child and you're at that age. And you can't
Yeah.
really sit down and be sure that you've corrected it.
Right. But I mean, like I said, they just grow out of it. You think it's a problem? It's just like when they're babies and they're colicky, like they're never going to stop crying, and then boom, they stop because they get older. It's like that in life, man. It's just everything just works itself out.
Let's move on to a kind of a surprise development here. For those of you listening, you play fantasy football. I'd love to hear your feedback on what makes your league fun. If it's your first year, your 5th or 10th or 20th year, if you'd like to be a guest on the show and you just want to talk some fantasy football, please send me a message, dantimepod@gmail.com. Travis, this season brought a change and a very unexpected change at the top where you voluntarily stepped down from the commissionership. Take me through,
Abdicated the throne. I stepped down from the throne.
a day many of us did not see coming, but now with kind of the facts at our disposal, I think we can relate, or I can understand. Okay, yeah, I would probably be willing to hand this off to somebody else. First of all, how does it feel to not be saddled with that responsibility and then kind of go backwards to your decision?
Well, it's not, I mean, saddled with the responsibility. I mean, we're talking about a free fantasy football league that we've been doing 20 years. I got to the point a couple years ago, well, really about, what was it, 10 years ago, you took over in an interim basis, and for reasons that I won't get into, I had to pull the reins back, not unlike Bill Snyder at Kansas State. It seems like he could always retire and then come back. Or Alvarez at Wisconsin. Yeah, I think the main thing was I love this league and I will always be in this league. But we used to do so much more, and whether it's, kids get in the mix and you get older, but it just seemed like it was kind of becoming a little bit stale, and that starts at the top. And I felt strongly that if we got somebody else in, that we could actually plan a proper winter meetings. We could maybe do a destination draft to the beach or somewhere else. Something that has always been wanted, but I was just never going to take the reins and do all that planning. So, really, this year, I was just getting pulled in so many different directions over the summer, and the draft is coming up. And I'm like, oh, yeah, I got to order the draft board, and I got to do all that. And then I got to get everything set up for the draft, and I have to make sure everybody's there, and you got to coordinate everything. And I just, as we were drafting, I was thinking, you know what? I think it's time for somebody else to do this, because if you just do the same thing over and over and over again, it can feel just kind of stale, like I said. And so I just made the decision during the draft that I'm going to put some feelers out there and see if anybody else wants to take the reins. And luckily, Jim Powell, a recurring guest, probably the most recurring guest, decided to step up and do it. And I'm excited to see what he does with it. And over the years, there's been things that people have wanted to change when it comes to, maybe roster size or just different administrative things about how we actually operate, and I think he'll bring some new ideas. It's gonna be fun, and I'm just gonna be a mere mortal once again. But one thing I will say to anybody listening, there's nothing better to talk about than your dreams or your fantasy football team. I think people really kind of scooch up in their chair when they hear about
absolutely
fantasy football. They do.
It's something that many of us look forward to, like opening presents on Christmas Day as a child. It's like that draft day, the start of the new season. However, your league
the day
takes
before
off.
The draft is the day before the draft is Christmas Eve for us.
Yeah. Well, I think it was good timing, and congratulations on a just remarkable tenure and your vision and leadership for so many years. Much appreciated.
I'm really hoping to get like a commemorative watch or something at the next draft that says thank you for your service. Here's a Casio watch.
I think there's been talk of a jacket.
A jacket. All right, I'll take it. Part of the club. But no, fantasy football is one of the coolest things. And, you know, having our dad in the league for all those years, I think was really special. We might have touched on this last time we talked, but it's a way to, I've explained it to Robin that yes, it's silly. And we are, you know, drafting teams of grown men and we score points, but it's so much bigger than that. It keeps a lot of communications open. I was so happy to see you and Terrence as the Zoom participants in this last draft. And when we took our mid-draft break, y'all just were on the big screen, just talking, just catching up.
Yeah.
I'm sure you don't get very many opportunities to really proactively, you know, reach out to Terrence or spend any meaningful time with him. So it's just that kind of thing where it just keeps us all together.
Oh, it was fantastic. I loved it. I think he appreciated the company as well on Zoom because I think this is my third virtual appearance. There was 2019 or 2020, and then there was 2015, and then now this year I couldn't make it up, but he's appeared virtually a few times. Really, really love Terrence.
Yeah, but I mean, to my point, it's, you know, fantasy football is fun, but it's almost like the vehicle that gets us all in the same place. Or even during the year when we're just on a massive text chain and somebody, you know, it's just, I don't know how many times we would all get together like that for any reason now that we're, you know, married, have kids, have careers, all that kind of stuff.
You know, John Crow appeared on last week's episode.
He did. It was a great episode.
And I think to your point there, as we get into this decade, you know, your 30s, you're still maybe doing some stuff either routinely or periodically with the guys. And in this decade, it's maybe a few times a year, depending on who you are and what you got on your plate. So, yeah, I like that we've kind of got this. Like, let's just say the league fizzled out 7 years ago. How often would you see a John Crow or, you know, he's in Atlanta now, and or Terrence Norton?
Just wouldn't. And it wouldn't be anything, you know, against anybody. It's just, you know, as your kids get older, you know, we're getting, you know, we have all these baseball tournaments and we have, you know, other stuff that we're doing, birthday parties and whatever it may be. And it's just really hard to say, sorry, you know, honey, this weekend I'm doing this or tonight I'm going here or there. Even something like the Birmingham Bowl that we used to go to all the time. You know, I'd feel bad if I was just like, hey, kids, I'm going to go to the Birmingham Bowl. And then my boys are like, well, can I come? I'm like, well, no, it's just me and the guys. I don't want to do that to them. So, you know, taking them to a lot more things that I would have done just with a group of friends. It's just how life goes. Oh, my God. If Michael or Joe or Allie heard that I was going to Topgolf without them, they'd freak out.
See, I can still do stuff like that for a few more years, but it doesn't come up very often.
Right.
Travis, we've been talking a little bit here. Let's just make this a quick conversation about the Cubs because I just don't think that we have to breathe too much oxygen into this, but, you know, I can't let things go. I can't let remote possibilities go. And as it stands today,
there's no way.
We're recording on Wednesday the 18th. The Cubs will be on MLB Network in about an hour. The rubber match of the series against the A's. course, we had to lose by a run last night.
Mm-hmm.
So no sweep. That's not going to happen. But we can't lose this series. Can't lose this game. We're six games back of the wild card. I think I was messaging earlier that if we lose today, I'm going to stop talking about it. I think we were five games out 2 weeks ago.
Yeah, there's been no movement.
No movement. We've moved the game back. So what are you, do you think some magic's going to happen, or what do you think?
No, I don't. And to be quite honest, this has been a tough year following baseball. The whole Spectrum debacle last year with ESPN moved me over to YouTube TV, and I don't have major, I don't have MLBN. So I can't, I can follow it on Yahoo and I can see the numbers on the page, but it's hard for me to get an understanding. And then also, you know, you had the World Cup, I'm sorry, the Euro Cup and the Copa America and then the Olympics. So all these things that have kind of dominated my sports watching. So I don't really have a good understanding of the season, even though I did play fantasy baseball, just barely missed the playoffs. But as for the Cubs themselves, I mean, you got the Braves directly ahead of us in the wild card. You get the Mets, and then I guess the Diamondbacks too. So, no, I don't think there's a chance. And then even if they get in, yeah, I know that crazy things happen in the playoffs, but I don't know. Just been kind of a frustrating season just watching it from afar.
Yeah, I think we'll get some near total clarity, I think, on Sunday. And if we go into this National Series starting tomorrow and we – let's say lose the first two games, or we've already lost two by Sunday, forget it. But they go on a hot streak because they're scoring runs. I mean, they are Ian Happ, bottom of the ninth last night, solo home run. I mean, we only scored three runs last night, but there was a good stretch there going back about almost a week and a half where we didn't score fewer than five runs in a game.
Right. Well, let me ask you this. As you're the foremost expert on this podcast about Cubs baseball, what's the plan? But just forget this year. It's moving forward. What is the plan?
Well, you've got to continue to get production, which we are. I mean, the first part of the year, you know, guys like Swanson and Crow Armstrong and Michael Bush, and we've got to continue to be able to count on them. Some of the injuries we've dealt with this year have hampered us a little bit. But I really like the trade for Paredes at third base. Our pitching has been our Achilles heel in the middle innings here in this home stretch. I mean, the first half of the season, we just couldn't score runs. We couldn't hold leads. We'll get out to an early lead and lose a bunch of those games. So trades, yeah, everyone focuses on blockbuster trades, and we were watching to see if the Cubs were going to sign Shohei Ohtani this past offseason. That's not really where the focus ought to be. I will say this. Let's say we don't win the next nine games in a row, but we win the next six games in a row. We're probably going to finish or hold on to second place in the division. With the passage of time and people just looking through the years of Chicago Cubs history, I mean, it optically looks good that we finished that high up in the division. That sounds terrible, but I mean, it's better. At one point this year, we were in last place and we were just sitting there.
Yeah. That's tough division. Everybody's kind of been bunched up all year, right?
Yeah.
Well, do you think that you will ever see the Cubs win the World Series again in your lifetime? Assuming you live to, you know, 90.
I do. I think we can win the World Series before this decade is out. Couldn't say how long. I mean, it's easy to say 5 years from now, but I mean, we could win the World Series in 3 years. You're talking about a team that's probably going to finish at least, I mean, unless something just goes disastrously wrong here in these last three series, you know, we should finish about 4, 5, maybe even six games over 500 this year. We're gonna hit 80 wins. Is it going to be 82? Probably something like that. We could finish with 85 wins.
But I don't understand how you get the World Series rings in 2016. Why that team couldn't do, like what the Astros have done over the last decade. Like, why couldn't they have sustained success? You know, even the Braves get to the playoffs almost every year. The Phillies are always there, the Dodgers. What is it? Like, we had everything in place, and then it just kind of fizzled out.
One of the most, I don't know if I would say hurtful, but it's something that you get over a lot of things with your teams, whether it's your college football team or your NFL team. Took me many, many, many years to get over the 2003 NLCS loss to the Marlins. It wasn't just the Bartman incident. It was Game 7. We had a lead in Game 7. Mm-hmm. Kerry Wood hit a home run in Game 7. Took me a very long time to get over that. It's taken me a long time, and I'm not completely over, and I don't know if I ever will be over what happened in 2021 at the trade deadline, where almost in the blink of an eye, Anthony Rizzo's gone, Javi Baez is gone, yeah. Chris Bryant's gone.
Chris Bryant.
It was just...
I was in Atlanta that day for Michael's 10th birthday. We were taking him to a Braves game, and I remember seeing that news coming across the wire. It was around 10 or 11 in the morning. We were at the hotel, and I couldn't believe it.
It was gut-wrenching.
Yeah.
And looking back, I mean, you kind of have to look back and say, not so much blame management or Jed Hoyer or whoever. It's like, come on, guys, did you have to lose whatever it was, 12 in a row? Why did we have to just – I'm getting a little upset right now, to be honest with you, but you just see stuff in baseball that is mind-boggling. It is a endlessly frustrating game. When people say they don't like baseball because this doesn't catch their interest, I'm fine with that. But I think some people don't follow baseball because they have experienced so many of these it's painful for some people. It's anywhere from painful to mind-boggling and confusing. I mean, you see it all the time. I can't tell you how many times I came home from school, Harry Carey and Steve Stone on WGN, and I'm watching the end of the seventh and then all the eighth and the ninth, and it's a 1 or 2 run lead, or we've got to get somebody on base and it's the bottom of the ninth and you watch somebody strike out looking and the fans are on their feet and there's two guys on base and we just got to hit one between the fielders and score a run to tie and it's a strike looking right down the middle. See
yeah.
a lot of stuff like that.
Well, I think it's equally as tough if you're a pro sports fan to deep down ask yourself the question, do the owners want to win or are they just in this to make money? Because you see several teams that seem like they don't care, like the Angels. Do the Angels care about winning?
That's a very valid question.
And these teams are moneymakers for the owners. You just have to, get approved and how much of the amount of capital to get in and own a team. Like, you're set.
Now, it's one thing that Dr. Glenn Fleisig mentioned a few episodes ago, and he said, at this point in 2024, every team has got a biomechanist or a biomechanical person on their payroll. But he said, if you look at the teams who just never win, they never reach the playoffs or they always lose in the first round, not all of them are to blame for not communicating well between departments. But the ones that don't are part of that bag of teams. So that could be the Angels. That's just listening to your people that say, hey, we don't need to stockpile a bunch of high velocity arms. This is becoming a problem. But
well, then how would you explain, as we're witnessing in real time, the worst season in Major League Baseball history with the Chicago White Sox? What on earth? How is this even possible? I mean, I love pro sports almost more than college sports because you have that parity across the board. And you're going to have teams that are in last place and you have teams that are bad. But this is like, if there was relegation, they'd be two levels down right now.
It's unacceptable.
It's insulting.
It's insulting. I'd hate to be just their social media director right now or anybody in public relations or communications with the White Sox. I mean, everything that you're putting out there has just got to be so just kind of brochure bland. It's like ignoring this monstrous problem and trying to promote these giveaways or somebody on the team's birthday. Let's all wish a happy birthday to our shortstop or we want to thank this entity that partners with us and we're so glad to be advancing this cause. It's like... Yeah, but there's a dumpster fire going on here that is wildly unexplainable. It's like teams lose over 100 games. That's not unprecedented.
Yeah.
To lose what they're on track for, I think right now the White Sox have already lost 116 games, so 36 wins. Very, very realistic doubt that they will get over the 40 mark. Just
what is the record? 42, 41?
They're 36 and 116 right now.
Yeah, but I was saying, what is the record of fewest games won?
Oh, I don't have it at my disposal because there's like modern history. There's the dead ball era. There's some pretty bad teams way back then, but I think it's go back to the 1930. I think it's the 1930 something Boston Braves. I believe is the record we're watching. I could be
Boston
wrong.
Boston Braves. I'm pulling it up. They were 38 and 115.
Mm-hmm.
Wow, the worst ever was the Cleveland Spiders in 1899. They were 20 and 134. They were 84 games back at the end of that season.
Yeah, the White Sox. You just look at this division, the AL Central. Cleveland at the top. Kansas City is 5 games back. Minnesota, 6.5. Detroit, 8. 8 games back. Chicago White Sox, 51. Not 12, not 17, not even 24 games back. Double it, triple it. 51 games out of first place.
They could be respectable 12, 15 games back, and you'd be like, hey, you know, we just didn't get it done this year, but 51 games back. And they've been this far back, like going back to July, it seems like June. I mean, it's just, it was never a question. Now, what do you think about the owner of the White Sox threatening to move, and then they would rally next year and win the World Series? Because that's what happened in the plot of
Major League.
Yeah. Say, we're moving to Nashville, or we're moving to San Antonio, wherever it may be. It'll get them whipped into shape because they don't want to move.
Yeah, you can't move the White Sox. You can't move the Mets. You can't move, you know, the Angels. It's these big market teams. It's not going to happen. I mean, if this was like the Royals, I don't know if it was Tampa Bay. But yeah,
anybody could move.
Mm-hmm. Detroit Tigers, 2000. I remember 2003, and I can't remember the exact record, but the Detroit Tigers lost close to 120 games. White Sox, I mean, they lost 5-0 yesterday.
Yeah. Pretty bad.
Anyway. All right. We could talk about this for a while here. Oh, one last thing on the White Sox. So they've got to go at least 7-3 over the final 10 games to avoid the mark of the 1962 Mets. That's just that team.
Yeah. They're not going to do it. No way.